Welcome to Section 9. My name's Damien Hull.
And I'm Dorothy. And today, Damien's going to talk about Metasploit, hacking into Metasploitable 2 using the MSF console and Armitage. But before we get started with the fun part of the show, as I call it, I kind of wanted to share something with all of you. When I first got out of IT school, I talked to our IT manager in the current job that I have and say, you know, I'm looking to get into IT as a IT hiring manager. Evaluate me, tell me what you think. And she says, well, you know, as old as you are, I'm not really sure I would want to invest much time in you because I'm only going to get about 5 to 10 years out of you. And another thing is, you know, I just really don't like it when people say they have labs at home. That really angers me, you know. So I thought, well, that's a very odd thing to say because, you know, if I was an employer, what I would want is somebody that is self-motivated, that is out there trying to practice and trying to learn certain things. So that kind of took me back a little bit. And right now, unfortunately for me, my office, they're thinking about laying everybody off. So that's forcing me to look at what are my employment opportunities. You know, I'm working on my skills while we're doing this show. I'm trying to acquire the skills for the job that I want. I'm not there yet. And I'm looking at, wow, is anybody going to let me get my foot in the door in IT? So I have this really wonderful director in our agency, and she's a woman that has gone through a lot. She had a lot of hits coming up on the jobs. I mean, she cleaned fish and, you know, just took odd jobs whenever she lost her job or, you know, the opportunities weren't there. And today she's the director of a major agency. So I thought, you know, I'm going to go down and talk to her and see how she did that because right now, I really need to get a job. So I sat down with her and I said, okay, this is the story from the IT manager. I share that with her. And I'm kind of afraid of age discrimination. You know, I'm capable. I'm trying to learn. I'm not sitting in there, you know, dying through the times, afraid of technology. So do you think I can get a job in IT? And her son is in IT, actually. And she told me, she says, I really don't think that age really matters in IT. What matters is, do you have the required skills for the job that they're asking for? And that is important. She says that if I could show that I could do the skills, employers are smart enough to, they will go, okay, I'm going to hire her. She has a good job ethic. She knows what she's doing. You know, I'm going to give her a chance. So that kind of gave me a little bit of hope. However, the reality for me is I don't have the skills just yet. So I have to work on that. And then I went over and had my teeth cleaned, and my dental hygienist says, well, I wouldn't be afraid about age discrimination. We just hired a 74-year-old accountant for our firm. So I thought, well, you know, that kind of gave me a little bit more hope. But at the end of the day, when all of us are looking to get into IT, it's like we mentioned in the show before. You need to acquire the skills that you want for the job that you want. But you also, if you are in an IT job, you need to maintain the skills that you have, so you don't lose them. So when you want to apply for a different job, it doesn't happen what happened to Damien, that he was like, well, I don't remember how to do that. I haven't done it in a long time and things have changed. So that's been kind of like a bear for me. It's kind of a hard thing in a bad economy when they're laying off 450 people and all of us are going to have to look for a job. So anyway, that's my story of the day. You actually had a little bit of a story job related as well with that recruiter.
Yeah, so one of the things that I'm having an issue with is trying to get into those mid-level IT positions because they really want you to have a lot of skills. And I think that the IT industry, at least here in Anchorage, Alaska, where we are, the qualifications or the skill set that you have for a lot of these mid-level positions has gone up a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, it's gone way up there. And I think part of that is my own fault because there are limited number of IT positions, and so I just apply for all of them. Whether I qualify or not, I'm applying anyway, just to see what happens. And I learn from that. You know, you get in there and you do your interviews, and that's one of the things I'm not very good at. So having done a lot of them, I think has helped me a lot in being able to do better interviews in the future. So I applied for a job at this company, and I won't say who it is because I don't think they really want people to know what's going on.
How long ago did you apply for this job?
So this one was a direct hire position, and it's not the one that you're thinking about.
Oh,
this
okay.
was like... I think maybe it was last year, something like that. It's been a while since I've applied for this position. And I didn't have the necessary skills for that position. But I thought the interview was done well, and the skill sets that they were looking for were not that much higher than where I'm at right now. I just didn't fit that position. So later on, I ended up getting a call from a recruiter saying, hey, there's this company that you'd be working for, and I kind of figured out it was the same company, but you're actually working for a third party managing some of that company's security piece of their IT puzzle.
So you'd be a contractor?
Sort of. You're working for somebody else, and then that company's, you know, outsourced to them and doing their stuff. So I said, okay, what's the requirements and all of that? And I thought, oh, this sounds interesting. And then I told him, I said, you know, I'm not entirely sure if I fit for this particular position, because the requirements were a little bit higher than the job I had interviewed for. And he says, no, it's going to be fine. You're going to be okay. And then his manager called me and said, okay, what's the story here? Because I don't think you fit this position either. And I told him what I thought of the whole thing, and he agreed. And then later on, he calls me back and he says, hey, they want to talk to you anyway. And I think what happened is they were having a hard time finding anybody for this position. So I went to the interview, and it was exactly what I was thinking. I'm not qualified for the position, and I'm not qualified because they're asking a lot. They want you to have experience with Palo Alto firewalls, with things like Nessus, with security audits and writing reports. There was a lot of things they wanted you to have. And then there was some networking questions, because that's part of security. You have to know some of the basics of network engineering and how these things talk to each other. So they quickly realize I'm not qualified for the position, and that's fine. The position's still out there, because I've run into a couple of different recruiters who seem to be searching for somebody to fill that same position or something similar to that. And the last person that called me, he thought I might be a good fit, was looking for somebody with a CISSP. And I told the guy, I said, look, I like CISSP. I think there's some good things in there, but it doesn't cover the technology you're going to be working with. You know, where's the Palo Alto firewall in that? Where's the Nessus? Where's the security audits? You know, the CISSP doesn't cover any of that. And so I told him, I said, it's going to be a hard to find anybody for this position. And especially here in Alaska, I know some people who can do the job, but they do not have a CISSP and they're already working. And they're looking for anybody from anywhere. I mean, they're going all over the place to look for these people. And they try to get people out of state to come to Alaska and take that position, and they're having a hard time to do that. So, even if they were to change the skill set, I probably still would not qualify because I don't have that, you know, Palo Alto and security auditing experience. So I don't think I'm the right fit for that. But I think in that case, it's an example of how the company is looking for, I think, too much out of one person. If they were to split that skill set amongst two people, I think they would find people who could take those positions and they would be fine.
Right. No, and you know, a lot of the things, there was an article in Dark Reading that were talking about that very same thing. I think companies, you know, want a lot, and they don't really understand that that's a lot for one individual, for example, to be able to do that. And you know people that can do the job, but they're already working for somebody, and they didn't just come out of school or wherever with all that skill set. They acquire those on the workplace, and they got to a point to where they're really versed and really good at what they do. Bottom line, I think that if for all of us that are trying to get into IT, the important thing that what I've taken out of my little experience right now, my little drama, my IT drama, is that I need to get the skills for the job that I want, and hope that someone that is not like that IT manager that is going to judge me based on age discrimination or working with a lab at home, I'm hoping that I get one of those employers that, you know, will look at what I can do instead of, you know, how old I am and whatever it is that they make judgments on, you know. So, but those people are out there. And, you know, for those of us that are trying really hard to get into the field of IT, it is something that we have to deal with. So anyway, let's get back to what you're trying to do, because this is the reason why you want a job in security. You're trying to break into the middle of things. So you're obviously trying to acquire a skill set. So what are you working on to do that?
So, yeah, and one of the things I should point out here is that you want to try to, you know, set up your lab in such a way that it matches what you're trying to get into. So if you're trying to get into network engineering, it should be a network engineering lab. You're trying to get into security. It should be a security lab.
Right.
So, you know, that's kind of where we're at right now. And I will say this, you know, my little Metasploit lab that I put together, I'm not entirely sure how this fits into the job I want to get. But it's one more skill that I could put down on my resume and say, I can do that. I know how to use that. I've seen that before.
Well, and you know, to kind of build on that, to me, not really giving somebody credit for doing a lab at home. To me, if I was an employer, I would look at somebody doing a lab at home and going, okay, they were able to do this on their own, trying to learn it by putting a lab together at home. I would want that kind of a motivation on somebody that I hire, because when a challenge comes up and something that they may not know or something they may need to do, they're going to know how to get the information, and they're not going to be afraid to be able to put it together and do it, you know, maybe first trying it in a lab and then implementing it at work. So I think it's important.
It is very important, because especially for me, you know, I'm in a two-person IT department. Right now, it's just me. We're getting a new person soon. And when you only have two people, you have to be willing to go out there and do things that maybe you weren't expecting to do. And you just have to figure out how to make it work, because there's only two of you. There's nobody else. You're it. So that ability to do research, figure things out, and maybe put something together. Now, there are times when you can't do that. It's just too much. And that's when, you know, you go to a third party and you say, hey, we need help. Can you come in and help us with this? But you should be able to do a lot of things on your own where you have to do research and be able to figure it out. That's really important.
Okay. So let's get back to how you're trying to acquire these skills.
So let me talk about my Metasploit lab that I have. And this goes along with our Kali Linux 2 book. So I'm doing this from Kali Linux. And the book is moving into a direction where they want you to use Metasploit to hack into Windows XP or Windows 7. I don't have XP. I don't have 7. And here's where I think the book kind of goes in a direction that I'm a little disappointed in. And it's a beginner book, so I understand kind of where they're coming from. You have to start somewhere. And that's fine. As a beginner book, I think it's great. The problem I have with this is that how do you know if a specific exploit is going to work against something like XP or 7? What version of XP or 7 do you have? Does the exploit work on that particular system? Now, maybe it does. I don't know. Obviously, it worked when they wrote the book. But you may have a version of Windows 7 that came after the book was published, and that doesn't work.
And this is what is important. When you're actually trying to do a lab on your own and you're trying to test if what this book says is solid, you're going to come across those kind of things. Things have changed since the time the book was published, or maybe there's some of the things that the book assumes that you can do, or maybe there are some of the things that you need to work on to be able to make it work. So I think, to me, that adds to the experience. So go ahead.
So I'm looking at that and I'm thinking, okay, I'm not entirely sure if these would work anyway, but I don't have 7, I don't have XP, so I can't even test it. So maybe they do work. I don't know. You might have to try that yourself and see what happens. So I said, okay, well, I don't have XP, I don't have 7. What am I going to use? Oh, well, let's use Metasploitable 2. I just need a target so I can practice. And what I'm looking for here is, can I use the MSF console with no GUI, no Armitage, which is the GUI front end? And I've talked about that before. You point and click and, oh, hey, it works. There's a little bit more to it than that. But in my case, when I did my testing originally, all I did was point and click, didn't have to learn too much, and I was able to hack into a 7 box. So now my goal is, how does this stuff work behind the scenes? What are some commands I can type in? How do you set up Metasploit so that it works properly? So again, we have Metasploit on Kali Linux, which is in my VMware server. It's on a VM. And then we have Metasploitable 2 in a VM on a VMware workstation on my laptop.
Okay.
And so I go into the Metasploit or the Kali Linux box, and I run my Metasploit, and lots of things just didn't work right. But here's what happened. I learned how to set up the database, which I had no idea how to do before. And Metasploit uses Postgres, which is just database software. And there's other ones out there like MySQL. Microsoft has its own thing. Oracle's got their own thing. So Postgres is just the database software they use for Metasploit. And then you connect to the database. So first you have to start the database. You type in your MSF console, and then you can do DB status, and it will tell you, hey, I'm connected. Or maybe not, depending on, you know, whether or not you have it configured properly. And then I tried to use DB underscore nmap, which is a way of using nmap from Metasploit where it will save the information in there that you can use to search. Well, that didn't work. So the way I figured out how to use it was to, start the database, use MSF console, check the status of the database. And then when I try to use db_nmap, if it doesn't work for me, like it's not connecting, I'll exit out of that, go back into Metasploit. And then for whatever reason, it seems to reconnect to that after I do all of that. So I don't know if that's the right way to do it. I might be missing something there. So I'm going to have to do some research on that and figure out why that doesn't initially work. But the reason why I want db_nmap is because now I can use nmap from inside of Metasploit. And I can scan my Metasploitable 2 box and actually see what's on there. So now I can type in hosts to see the hosts I've scanned. If I've scanned more than one, it'll list all of that. And then I can do services, which is a command, and I can see all of the services that are on that particular system. Maybe it has Apache, maybe it has FTP, and for Metasploitable 2, there's a bunch of stuff that will show up. And then you can search for a service. So say, for example, I want to hack in through Apache. I can do a search and I can type in Apache and it will show me all of the exploits for Apache. And then I can try to see if any of that matches up with the service I'm seeing and the version of Apache that's on that particular system and see if I can hack in using one of the exploits. And then we have the use command, which allows you to select the exploit you want to use, and you put in the full path for that, and now it's selected. And then what you have to do is you have to type in show options, because there's going to be options you have to set for that specific exploit. One of the options that I think all of them are going to have is our hosts. Our host is just short for remote host, and you have to give it the IP address so it knows what system to attack. And then you can do set our host and then give the IP address, which is how you set the option.
Right.
And then if you type in show options again, it will show the options and it will show you also the settings you put in there for that particular option. And then to use it, you can type in run or exploit, and then Metasploit takes care of everything for you. It actually goes out to that system and tries to attack it using that particular exploit.
Cool. So when you got on Metasploitable 2, were you able to do ifconfig and see that you were in there?
You can do ifconfig. You can do all your Linux commands. Now, I didn't double check to see if I was logged in as the root user. I may have to do some sort of privilege escalation where maybe you break in as a normal user and then you actually use a privilege escalation to gain root access.
Okay. So what did you find out about Metasploitable 2 once that you were in there?
All you're trying to do is say, okay, I'm in. And that's all I wanted to do was say that I'm in.
Okay.
And once you're in, you're in. But here's the thing. I'm making it sound simple. So there were issues I had with Metasploit, right? I learned how to use the database and all of that.
Right.
Which is something I didn't know how to do before. So now when we talk about Metasploitable 2, I had all kinds of issues with that. It took me like 20, 30 minutes to figure out why I couldn't get it connected to the network. And one of the things I think is really important to mention here is that I also have, along with VMware Workstation, the other one, VirtualBox, installed as well. So once I got Metasploitable 2 up and running, because I'd already had it installed and configured and it was working before. So this time around, when I tried to check the IP address, it's supposed to get a DHCP assigned address. It's on a bridged network configuration for the virtual machine. It should reach out to the network and get a DHCP assigned address. Well, it didn't do that. So I spent 20, 30 minutes trying to figure out, okay, what's wrong with the networking piece? And in my mind, I thought this has got to be a local issue somewhere. Turned off the Windows firewall, thinking that might be a problem. I did a bunch of stuff. Moved myself to a different network and all this. And it was all, trying all kinds of things to make this work. And then I said, okay, let's go back to my original idea of this being local to either the host OS, Windows in this case, or it's part of the VM configuration. Something's wrong there.
Okay.
So I went into the VM configuration, took a look at the network adapter, and there's an advanced button you can click on. And when you do that, you get a list of all of these different interfaces that you can kind of associate with that particular virtual network interface, because we're talking about a virtual machine here. So that, okay, I looked at this before and I left it the way it was because I didn't understand what was on this list. Like, why are they checked? And I saw on the list VirtualBox and a bunch of other stuff in here. And these are all the different things that, again, can be associated with that virtual network interface. So I thought, okay, what am I actually using here? The physical network interface or the Ethernet, port on this particular laptop to go out to the network. So I said, okay, well, let me just uncheck everything else and leave that as the only thing that's checked.
Did it work?
Started the VM, logged in, did the ifconfig. Oh, there's an IP address.
Nice.
So, you know, when you do these labs, you kind of have to get used to this idea that there are going to be issues and you're going to run into these things. And that's actually, while it's frustrating to have that happen because you want to say, okay, I learned something about Metasploit. I can type in the commands. I can hack into Metasploitable 2. Having these issues come up in a lab environment is perfect because you learn something from that so that when you go into that real world environment working for a company, you can say, hey, I've seen issues with this. When I go to deploy my VM, I may run into issues and they may be similar to what I've seen in my lab. And you can actually use some of that when you're troubleshooting situations that you have at work because it's going to be similar. Not always, but in this case, I think, you know, if I try to do this kind of work on, well, I don't know if it would really apply to our VMware stuff that we have at work, but you know, similar things can come up where you have to think outside the box and say, okay, maybe there's a setting someplace on this particular system I need to look at and figure out, okay, what's the correct setting? Because this may not be correct.
And, you know, I would rather find that out in a lab than in a production environment.
Yeah. So I think when I look at this, and I didn't realize this at the time because it took me several hours to get this lab up and running and actually hack into Metasploitable 2, lots of research online, looking at the book, trying to get my Metasploitable 2 system up and running and getting connected to the network. The thing that I think I can take away from all of this is that, one, I now have a new skill. I now understand how to set up Metasploit correctly, make sure the database is started, make sure you have access to things like nmapdb, and now I have commands I can type in that do something. Because if you look at our previous episode, I talked about Metasploit and some commands. And what did I talk about? Show. Well, what does show do? Nothing. It, you know, it's only giving you information about what's on the system. Show exploit shows you all the exploits in Metasploit. Well, okay, can you hack into a box with that? No, you can't unless you understand how to use things like the use command, the exploit command, you know, setting your options, doing a scan is a big deal. Because you need to know what services are on that system to try to see if you have an exploit for that particular service. Now, the other thing I learned from this, again, goes back to that Metasploit issue or Metasploitable 2 issue. I can troubleshoot that now in the future. And I can remember, hey, if I have different systems that have issues, it may be a local setting someplace I need to look at. So those are two things that I think are going to be a big help going forward. But there's one thing that's missing.
What's that?
Where's my CVE? Because we talked about using CVEs before to say, okay, I'm gonna search for a CVE number.
Because the CVE will tell you the vulnerability of whatever system you're trying to break into.
Right. And so what Metasploit does is they go from CVE, they map CVE numbers to an actual exploit code that you can use to attack that particular vulnerability. So that's where OpenVAS comes into play. We don't have Nessus, which I think I want to get because you can actually get...
There's a free version.
Yeah, you can get what they call a personal license, and then that's yours. It's limited to what you can do.
Right.
But at least you can say, hey, I've used Nessus, right? I think that's a step in the right direction. So in my case, I'm going to use OpenVAS. And why? Because I want to use the CVEs to hack into Metasploitable 2 so I can say, okay, here's a list of CVEs that are part of Metasploitable 2. These are the vulnerabilities that we have on this particular system, right? And then when I use Metasploit, I can just put in, you know, search, CVE number, exploit, or, you know, well, I guess I would have to set the options and then exploit.
Okay. So take me back because what you said when you were doing the Metasploit is that you set your parameters, right? So you set like the R host and the IP address, whatever. And then for the exploit, you would say use. So what you're trying to tell me is that you would set that CVE as an exploit and then say use, or how do you?
So here's how this works, right? Okay. So and here's where it gets really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
When I did it the first time, right, I'm using the services that are on that system and guessing at which one I want to try to hack into and guessing at what exploit is going to actually work for that particular service. So for example, I think Apache had a bunch of options in there, right, for which exploit you might use based on whatever version you might have on there. So you have to kind of guess which exploit's going to work in that case because it may show four or five options.
Okay.
Which one do I use? I'm not sure. So when you look at something like a vulnerability scanner and the system says or your report has a particular vulnerability on, let's say, Metasploitable 2, and then you click on that and you see a CVE number, you know that there is a vulnerability on that system that is mapped to a specific CVE.
So they're tied together.
They're tied together.
Nice.
So when you go to search for that CVE number in Metasploit, it's not going to give you four or five options. It's going to give you one.
Of course.
So that to me is a much better way of hacking into a system because you're hacking based on vulnerability, not based on service. Service is a good way to do it, but hacking by vulnerability is a more narrowed, you are hacking a specific vulnerability instead of guessing in my case. Like, well, okay, of the five options I may have for a given service, which one do I pick?
Well, when you're hacking, you don't want to be sitting in there going, oh, I'm going to go here. Oh, I'm going to go there. Just go right where you want to go. You know, take that path.
Right. So the CVE number is a targeted attack for a very specific vulnerability.
Nice.
Now, it's no guarantee that you're actually going to get in, but you have a better chance of doing so because you know what vulnerability is on that system. So I ran into all kinds of issues with our OpenVAS system, and I think I want to save that for another episode so we can talk about OpenVAS and how to set that up and how that maps into something like Metasploit where you're going to use those CVE numbers.
So you're more comfortable with Metasploit now?
Yeah. So now I can actually say, hey, you know, when you talk about Metasploit, I know something about that. You need help setting it up? I can tell you some things I ran into.
Nice. No, it sounds like really interesting.
And the interesting thing about that is that, you know, when we talked about using checklists,
mm-hmm.
I need a checklist for Metasploit. And then I can, you know, write that and have that list out there so that I know, okay, here's my 10 steps to set it up. And here are some commands in here to make sure I can hack into a box.
You know, so these
are
the commands. Did you document it this time?
Not yet. But I'm going to go back over some of the things that I've done, you know, some of the websites I went to, the commands they have on there, and then we can write all those down and put them in a list of commands that we can use to hack into a box.
You know, and I like that. I mean, this is the part that I think I need to learn. You're trying to put the test, that Kali Linux book, and then you're coming up with all these new things that you have to learn or research to be able to make it work. So at the end of the day, I think you're going to be, you know, kind of more advanced than most people when it comes to that, because you would have done a lot of research that if a book would have given it to you and say, do this, do that, blah, 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 and everything would work just fine, I don't think it would have been as worthwhile. I don't know. I'm goofy that way, I guess.
No, because now I know there are websites out there that have the commands I want to use. The problem I had in the past is that, okay, they're there, but I don't understand the commands because I'm not actually trying to use it that way. Now,
so the book is useful for the commands? It's just
for some of the commands, and it points you in the right direction, right? Because it's going to cover a lot of different things. It's not just a Metasploit book. It's a Kali Linux book, so there's lots of different things it's going to cover, and I think that's a good thing. So I don't look at the book and say, okay, you're too old, I can't use you, you don't know it, you know, there's not enough in here for me to do advanced things. It's a starting point.
It's a guide.
And it's a guide. And so I'm going to use that in combination with websites and videos to help me figure out how to actually do something.
Awesome.
So anything else?
Actually, you do have some news. You got a new person that you hired for your job.
We did. Now, I don't
tell
know.
Tell us what you decided that this guy was the right person for the job. Please share that with me. I really need to hear it today.
So I will tell you this. He has the skill set that we just got done talking about.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of those people that has a lab at home. He's one of those people that has tried to figure certain things out on his own. And that's what I need. Because like I said, there are people out there who look at IT as a job. They can do their 10, 15, 20 things. Outside of that, they have issues. They can't really function very well. So they have to have structure. Here's how you do this. Here's how you do this next task. Here's how you add users to the network. Here's how you make modifications to this particular system. If you give them a situation where it's not going to fit in a nice, neat little box, they will fall apart and not be able to function, and they won't be able to get work done. So we need somebody who can figure things out on their own a bit, because we don't necessarily have everything in a nice, neat little box. We have people that call in, hey, here's my situation, here's what I'm having issues with, and we don't have a plan for that because maybe this is something new, you know, or maybe they have a new printer that they want to have installed. Do we have a process for this new printer? No, we don't. Well, where's the drivers? I don't know. You got to find them. So I think that he's going to be somebody who is going to be able to do that. Oh, new printer, new driver, let's go search for that. Some people, they just can't do that. You have to give them the driver. You have to tell them where the driver is. They don't know that there's a website out there with a driver on it that you can download and put it onto that system. You know, so I think he's going to work out. We have to wait and see. I haven't actually seen him in action yet. So,
But you liked what he had to say. And
I liked what he had to say, and I was kind of surprised we found somebody with his skill set.
Nice. Well, my hope is that, and you know, I was just thinking as we were recording, if there are people like that IT manager that are going to judge me that way, I really wouldn't want to work for them anyway. I really want an employer that would allow me the freedom to play in a lab, learn from that, and be able to move on with technology. So that's my part in it. Anyway, don't give up. Just keep trying to get your skills. Keep the ones that you have, and good luck.
Yeah, and if you want to take a look at our show notes, you can see them at section9.us. If you have any comments or questions, you can email us at info@section9.us.
Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening.